Fame. The Radio Hall of Fame is presented during the full hour ahead by the Philco Corporation, makers today of electronic battle equipment for the fighting forces of the United Nations. Makers tomorrow of equipment for good living in a free world united by victory. Cooperating with Philco are the editors and correspondents of Variety, who report for the Philco program all the news of all show business the world over every week. This week, the editors of Variety recommend for your pleasure and Philco delights to honor in your name,
from the American stage, Miss Helen Hayes in scene from her current Broadway success, Harriet.
From Hollywood, George Jessel.
From radio and phonograph recording studios, Kay Armand.
From the nightclubs, Sheila Barrett.
And the Paul Whiteman Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus. Our master of ceremonies, the distinguished critic, composer, and commentator, Deems Taylor.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Deems Taylor speaking for Philco. Before we take up the regular order of business, I'd like to say just a word to remind you of the rather special motives and aims of the Radio Hall of Fame. Now, during the next 60 minutes, you're going to hear a number of distinguished performers whom you've probably heard before. And you may hear them doing things that you've heard them do before. Well, that's because this show of ours is built, partly, on the theory that if you hear something on radio that you particularly like, it's probably worthy of a return engagement. Also, we believe in selecting certain figures who are less well-known in radio and bringing them to your attention. In any case, all the ingredients are chosen from the best in all branches of entertainment, according to the best judgment of the editors and correspondents of Variety, the theatrical weekly that serves as the eyes and ears of show business and the Hall of Fame. And so to work. I'm sorry to say that Paul Whiteman continues to be too ill to be with us today. But in his stead, Ted Dale leaps nimbly to the podium and bids the orchestra and the chorus to let down the drawbridge and open the gates of the Hall of Fame with "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning." Overture, please.
Looks like it's climbing clear up to the the ever cloudy out in Oklahoma. Folks will always holler howdy as they ride along. When they find it necessary to go rootin' tootin' out across the prairie, everybody out in Oklahoma shouting out a little song.
Even if they forgot to tell you in school, the movies have revealed the fact that Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone and went to his reward with no regrets for having made every home a listening post. Today, even as I speak, America's leading expert in the art of one-way telephoning is in a broadcasting studio 3,000 miles to the west of us, pawing the rug and avidly eyeing the telephone. And our Ouija board has registered no complaint from Professor Bell. So everything must be all right, including George Jessel. In fact, the option that he has long held on American laughter is ample testimony that he must be all right. Georgie has recently become a headache expert as well, for he's now the producer of the forthcoming 20th century picture, The Dolly Sisters. And so, in gratitude for his lifetime's contribution to the gaiety of at least one nation, and wishing him well in his latest enterprise, Variety recommends, and Philco is happy to honor, George Jessel. From way back when, and from Hollywood.
Thank you so much. I am honored indeed to be on this Hall of Fame program, particularly since I've been chosen out of retirement. For this past year has found me sitting behind a desk as a motion picture producer, away from the glitter and glamour of acting. I'm an executive. All day I sit studying the racing for different manuscripts for motion picture production. 3,000 miles away from Broadway, and yet, outside of about 80 degrees in temperature, there's not much difference. Out here, the weather is balmy, the palms are out, and in New York, there's my relations, balmy, and their palms are always out. 3,000 miles away, and yet in fancy I can see myself in New York right now, making my usual Sunday visit to my mother's house. I open the door, I say, "Mother, it's me, I'm home again." She looks at me and says, "That Frank Sinatra, when he sings it's gorgeous, I could just die." But one thing I do miss out here, seriously, and that is my mother's cooking. The closest I can get to it is a delicatessen that we have right near the studio, a very quaint little place run by a Mexican, Manuelo Levine. And this Levine... he is right up to the minute as a business go-getter. Whatever picture our studio is making, he prepares dishes to conform with the picture. You know what I mean? For example, when we made the picture Lifeboat, his luncheon specialty was herring on a raft. When we were making Buffalo Bill, he served scalped corned beef on rye. And with every pot roast, he gave away a moccasin. Oh. Then we made a picture called The Gang's All Here. That time he had hash. But anyhow, there is a picture being made now called Jane Eyre with Orson Welles and Joan Fontaine. Jane Eyre, with its castles and its quaint old English setting. So Levine has changed the name of his delicatessen to Ye Old Salami Shoppy. You know, I beg your pardon. Hello, Mama? How are you, dear? Oh, I'm fine. I'm broadcasting right here on the radio. There's no benefit. I'll get something, sure. You're listening? You're listening to the little radio I sent you? How is it? You don't play so good. Well, did you change the bulbs around like I told you? You did. You put the big bright one from the kitchen in. Well, how is it now? It don't play so good, but it's better to read by. Well, that's all right. Tell me, how's my little brother Willie getting on at school? He got good marks in composition. Well, that's good. The teacher gave the class a half hour to write a composition on baseball. Willie wrote one in a minute.
Oh, of course.
What kind of composition can you write on baseball in a minute? He wrote rain, no game. Well, that's all right. Oh, of course he's cute. I know he's cute. What did he do last night? You were listening to some jive music. He said, Mama, would you like to see me cut a rug? Uh-huh. So what happened? Now we got 12 little rugs in the front room. That'll be good. What else is doing? You got a letter from Cousin Milford from camp. Yes, I should be proud of Cousin Milford. Why? He's in the army only 3 months. He's already a brigadier general. Yeah, 3 months. You better read the letter again. He's generally in the brig.
Oh, well.
Yeah, who is yelling like that? I can hardly hear you. Oh, Willie wants to talk to you. Well, put him on. Hello, Sonny. You want me to sing what? A song called My Heart Tells Me. Well, why must it be that particular song? It's number one.
I see.
And you bet all your marbles with little Emil Newman that if I sing it, it'll go down to 24?
Oh, are you cute? I'll kill you. All right, here goes.
My heart tells me this is just a fling. Yet you say our love means everything. Do you mean what you are saying? Or is this a little game for playing?
I like this song. I really do. It's a pretty song. It's the kind of a song that I used to sing when I first went on the stage a long time ago. Oh, my. Over 20 years ago. Easy. I'll never forget when I first made my debut, the first time I went on the stage. I played at Hammerstein's Music Hall at 42nd Street and Broadway. And I'll never forget my first criticism. Syme, writing the Variety, said, "This kid's going to be heard from in more ways than one." I wonder how he meant that. But of course, in those days, nearly all the songs were like this one, My Heart Tells Me, sentimental love songs. And you knew they were love songs by their titles. By the Light of the Silvery Moon, Let Me Call You Sweetheart. Today the love songs are The Jersey Bounce, I Get the Neck of the Chicken, and Beat Me, Daddy, with the Boulder Dam. Oh, how I can remember how my daddy used to sing to my mother. Will you love me in December as you do in May? Now he sings Pistol Pack and Mama, Put That Thing Away. Everything has changed, my friends. We live in a strange age, strange indeed, and so lacking in romance. When I was a kid, a fellow would take his sweetheart home, say goodbye to her at the garden gate, kiss her hand, and treasure the memory of that kiss. The day a fellow kisses a girl's hand, he's liable to wind up with nicotine poisoning.
If I'm a fool enough to see this through, will I be sorry if I do? Shall I believe my heart for you?
Philco is a visit from the men at the front who are using the weapons of war they build. Recently, a gathering of Philco laboratory and production engineers listened to a British naval officer fresh from combat duty. He spoke in glowing, grateful terms of enemy ships destroyed, of Allied soldiers and sailors saved by radio and electronic equipment designed and produced by these Philco men. An American officer transmitted the thanks of the men on Guadalcanal for the care, precision, and reliability that these soldiers of production had built into Philco war equipment. You can imagine the lift that such visits give to these Philco men. Radio and electronic equipment, rocket projectiles for the famed bazooka, storage batteries for landing craft, become more than mere units of war equipment. They are tools of attack and defense in the hands of soldiers and sailors they've seen and met. Someday, That same spirit will be carried over to the radios and television sets, the electric refrigerators and air conditioners that will appear again under the famous Philco name. They'll be built for the comfort, convenience, and entertainment of people like yourself, with quality, care, and understanding.
A moment ago, I mentioned the fact that we salute not only the veterans, but the people new to stardom. Here's one of the latter now. Her name is Kay Armin. Not long ago, Variety heard her on the air singing from a station in Nashville, Tennessee, and heralded that, in its judgment, she was a young singer of exceptional promise. Or, as Variety put it more briefly, the gal is tops. In addition, Miss Armin has made two recordings whose sales have been over a million each. All of which furnishes ample grounds for Variety to recommend and for Philco to salute Kay Armin, who now gives you her version of Embraceable You.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, my irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me. I love all the many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. Don't be a naughty baby. Come to mama, come to mama, do. My sweet embraceable you. I love all the many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you.
Her name is Helen Hayes. I think there's not a better loved actress in America, or a more admired one. Great is a dangerous adjective to fling about too lavishly, but I think that most theater goers will agree that she is one of the great actresses of our time. To millions of Americans, she'll always be the appealing Leora Tozer of Aerosmith, or the tragic nurse of A Farewell to Arms. To others, Victoria the Queen, Mary of Scotland, the heartbreaking heroine of Coquette. It's not for us to bring her fame. She is fame. Just now, if you look for her in New York, you'll find her in a theater on 43rd Street east of Broadway, the Henry Miller Theater. In the lobby, you'll see an array of daguerreotypes, quaintly posed and delicately tinted, portraits of the people of the play Harriet, a hit on Broadway ever since March of last year. It was with Helen Hayes in mind that Florence Ryerson and Colin Clements wrote their play about Harriet Beecher Stowe. And you'll hear how right they were when she comes from the wings of our Hall of Fame to play a scene from Harriet. Enter now Helen Hayes, together with Sidney Smith, as Harriet's brother, Henry Ward Beecher.
Helen Hayes.
about 1850. Scene, the new home of Harriet Beecher Stowe in Brunswick, Maine. Harriet and her four children have just moved in, and the household is in considerable confusion. Georgiana, the eldest of the Stowe children, and Jerusha Pantry, local constable and man of all work, have been helping Mrs. Stowe to set the living room in order. They've barely finished when a caller is announced. It is Harriet's famous preacher brother, Henry Ward Beecher. He enters with a characteristic Henry Ward Beecher flourish and...
Henry!
Harriet, my dear. I was lecturing in Boston, and I couldn't resist the temptation to come up and see you.
Of course you couldn't.
If only for a few hours.
No, you must stay. Georgiana?
Yes, Ma?
Tell the workmen to go home. I can't bother with them now. And find the twins.
Right away, Ma.
Henry, let me feast my eyes on you. How handsome you've grown and how distinguished.
No.
And prosperous, too. Look at that satin and broadcloth. And famous. Even the papers up here are full of your new church. Does it really seat 3,000?
With standees in the aisle every Sunday. Oh. My pulpit's in the middle on a raised platform. Oh. I can see everyone.
And everyone can see you.
Yes. How's everything with you, Harriet? And your good husband, you wrote me Calvin was still in Cincinnati?
Finishing his book. Henry, it's so delightful to have you here.
Oh, dear sister. What about the books you were going to write?
Oh, was there ever a time I was such an optimist?
There was a time you had faith in yourself.
I was young.
Oh, are you trying to pretend you're old?
I'm worse than old. I'm middle-aged. But don't pity me. I'm a very happy woman. I am. As happy as any woman can be whose husband sleeps with Dante's Divina Commedia under his pillow. It slips down, Henry. It slips down.
Oh, I won't let you change the subject.
Oh, you're as bad as my editor. He's always nagging.
Excuse it, Mrs. Stowe.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Hobbs. What is it?
How do you feel about codfish?
Codfish? Mrs. Hobbs, my brother, Mr. Beecher.
I do.
Am I supposed to feel something about codfish?
Of course, codfish is breakfast. But my point is, in case of more company coming, a codfish can be stretched.
Cook whatever you like, Mrs. Hobbs. Eggs, codfish.
Yeah, Mom. Proud to meet you, Reverend. I'm a poor hand with eggs, but you can't miss with a codfish.
You ask why I don't write a book.
Well, of course, I shut myself in my study every day. Allow no one to disturb me. What are you laughing at?
I'm afraid it's at you. Henry, don't be too successful. Don't grow sleek and smug. I'm sorry, dear. I keep hearing about your popularity, your success, and sometimes I grow afraid.
You need have no fears for me, Harriet. With the Almighty's servants, your brother is the humblest, the most self-effacing, the most... Did you hear about my auction?
Your slave auction? Yes.
An auction in a church. Picture the scene. It was indescribable.
I thought the newspapers did very well.
Think of it, Harriet. An exquisite young slave girl. Beautiful hair, beautiful eyes, beautiful figure, and a professing Christian, standing suppliant before the congregation.
Didn't she distract the congregation's attention?
From what?
From the pulpit, Henry.
Only for a moment. Harriet!
I'm sorry, Henry. That was wicked of me. And you did marvelously, dear. You raised $1,000, wasn't it?
1,100. More than enough to buy her freedom. Strong men wept. Women became hysterical, tore off their rings and bracelets, threw them on the platform. The following Sunday, the church was packed. Packed. Since then, I've redeemed four more slaves.
All of them beautiful.
Oh, especially the last. Why, she... what does your editor want? Your editor. You say he nags you.
Oh, yes. He wants a three-part serial. An abolitionist story illustrating the evils of slavery.
Capital idea. Have you started writing?
No.
We must show them. We must come out squarely for emancipation.
Oh.
No, Reverend, I don't agree with you.
Mr. Pantry. Mr. Pantry's been helping us get settled, Henry. Mr. Pantry, this is my brother, Mr.
Beecher. I seen him get off the train. What I say about emancipation is slaves is property, and you can't touch property.
Mr. Pantry, have you ever seen a slave?
Can't say as I have. That is not when he was slaving.
Then you don't know. I've lived in a border state. I know what slavery is.
But you got to look at the question from all sides. Tain't as if abolition only hit the South. Take my brother. He's got a mill over Linway. If the slaves was freed, who'd raise the cotton for his mill? They'd have to pay white men to do it. Cotton would go sky high, and you'd be ruining the value of his property.
It's beginning to get dark, Mr. Pantry. If you don't start your lamp lighting, the town meeting will complain again.
I'm starting. I just wanted a good look at the Reverend. You can't get away from it. Slaves is property, and property is sacred.
They blame the South. For every slave owner, you can count 10 Northerners like that. Selfish, greedy...
Only blind. They don't know what slavery is. Because it's so far away, they can't picture the evil they're defending.
Then you must picture it for them, Harriet.
I dare not, Henry. I'm afraid of what it might do to me. There's something insidious about that subject. It's so dark and terrible. It seems to drive everyone who touches it into a sort of insanity. I did try to write, Henry. An idea came to me in church. But it wasn't an idea. It was more like a picture, a scene unrolling before my eyes. An old, gray-haired slave, very gentle and very religious, was being beaten by order of an overseer. I even seemed to know the overseer's name. A horrible man. The whole thing was too painful, too harrowing.
Nevertheless, you must write it, Harriet.
No. I was never meant to fight the world, Henry. I care too much what people say of me. I dread their bad opinion. If I were ever forced to face public censure, I believe I should die.
Mama!
Quietly, Georgie. What is it?
I was going past Lowell Den's place with the twins, and she was looking for Mr. Denton, and no one was home. But I knew you'd want her, so I brought her home with me, Mama.
Who, Georgie? Who?
The slave.
Georgiana, what did you say?
The slave woman. She's outside. Come in, Suki.
But, Georgie, we can't.
Please keep her, Mama. She's so frightened. Come in, Suki. It's all right.
No, but I don't want to come in here. No, I want to go.
Oh. Draw the curtains, Henry. Close the door and keep watch at that window, Georgie.
No. You ain't Mrs. Denton. And to tell me to ask for Mr. Denton.
Mr. Denton isn't here, but we're your friends. We're abolitionists.
Oh.
Like Mr. Denton.
Oh.
Yes, you're safe here.
That man...
It's my brother, Suki.
I'm your friend, too, Suki.
Don't be afraid. Sit down, Suki. I'll sit beside you. Now lie back and close your eyes and try to rest. Henry, how do you suppose she got here?
On the coastwise steamer from Savannah, probably. I believe the captain smuggles one or two slaves out every trip. Harriet, you sure you ought to take the risk? They caught Dr. Willard and his son and put them in jail.
Jail!
Now, Suki, now...
He's talking about jail!
Nothing's going to happen to you. Here, let me put this shawl over your shoulders.
My old missus, she had a shawl like that.
Did she, Suki?
Yes, ma'am. Just like. And when she died, they bury her in that shawl. They bury her. Then they sell all the niggers. They sell my husband, sell me, sell my children. They sell my baby.
Oh.
My baby wasn't even weaned yet.
When you get to Canada, you can earn money to buy your children.
No, ma'am. They's all scattered. Scattered and sold.
Mama! Someone's coming! They're coming up the walk!
Who is it?
Mr. Pantry and a man!
Oh.
Why, they just walked in without even so much as knocking.
This is the way, Haley.
The slave catcher!
Quiet, Suki. For the impudence of them to walk into...
Back again, Miss Stowe.
I'm sorry, Mr. Pantry. I can't see you now.
We didn't come to see you, Miss Stowe.
We came for your runaway friend.
Oh, he catch me, catch me. Oh. Don't drag me back. Don't let him.
No, Suki, no.
Oh, they'll beat me, Michael. Beat me.
Henry.
Yes, Harriet. Look here, you two. I know you're paid a reward for every capture. Suppose we were to offer you the same money or a little more.
Bribery. You weren't a reverend. I'd knock you down. Come along now, you. Come along.
Oh, they want me to kill
Don't
me.
Don't you touch her.
We got the law on our side, Miss Stowe.
We shall see about the law. We'll hire a lawyer. We'll take it to court.
You're lucky if you don't end up in court yourself. They could throw you both in jail for what you've done already.
Henry!
I'm afraid we're helpless, Harriet. I'll go along, see that Suki's well treated.
Come on, you. Come on, be quiet.
Oh, Lord. You're going to have me now, Lord, because ain't nobody going to do nothing for me with you, Lord. No!
Somebody, what you love?
No, it must be somebody. There must be somebody. What kind of people do they think we are?
You did all you could, Mama.
Oh, no, George. My dear came to me in church of an old gray-haired slave, very gentle, very religious. And there was an overseer. I even seemed to know his name, Simon Legree. A horrible man. Oh, Georgie, I'm frightened. I'm being forced into an undertaking that's beyond my powers. I haven't the wisdom, I haven't the strength, I haven't the courage.
But, Mama...
Don't worry, Georgie, darling. I'll manage it somehow.
Manage what, Mama?
A book. An ugly, necessary book about slaves and slavery. I'll call it Life Among the Lowly, I think.
I don't like that name very much.
Well, then, suppose I call it Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Oh, Mama, I like that.
Then I shall write it. Somehow, God helping me.
Our thanks, Helen Hayes, for an inspired moment in the life of Harriet Beecher Stowe. In just a few minutes, Miss Hayes is coming back to give us another scene from Harriet. Regularly, every week at about this time, Glenn Riggs marches to our microphone and with superb self-confidence, regularly muffs his chance of immortality. His stance is superb. His poise, unshakable. His eye fairly pierces the mic. This is his moment. And what does he do with it? Does he unwrap some verbal jewel of poesy and imagination? He does not. Does he say, this is the indigo tracery? No. Does he perhaps venture the observation that this is the azure filigree or the ultramarine dentelle? No. What does he say, this man with the earthbound soul? He says,
this is the Blue Network.
The Philco Radio Hall of Fame, Act Two, with Helen Hayes, Kay Armin, Sheila Barrett, and the Paul Whiteman Orchestra and Chorus. The last named group now swing into a medley of airs from a contemporary Broadway hit show that first saw the lights of the Great White Way nearly 40 years ago. Not that Franz Lehár's masterpiece has been running steadily ever since, but every successive revival of it reveals its unquenchable vitality. We bring you now on the Hall of Fame a Whiteman treatment of three longtime favorites from the present-day Broadway revival of The Merry Widow.
dance and never stop. The ladies smile so sweetly, I catch and kiss them neatly.
Perhaps you recall a period when the current great voice was a soft-spoken gentleman who graciously but firmly insisted that his time was your time, and vice versa. In other words, Rudy Vallée. One of the regular contributors to Mr. Vallée's hour was Sheila Barrett, who soon revealed herself as a young woman possessed of a particularly savage gift of mimicry. She has long been a favorite of the nightclubs, but more recently has been overseas entertaining our armed forces. Now she's back with us, to the delight of her audiences and the despair of her victims. Variety, plucking a nosegay of some of her finest characterizations, salutes both her gifts and her unselfish services. And Philco and the Hall of Fame happily concur and welcome Miss Barrett for a repeat performance of her famous act, You're Not the Type. Scene, a casting office, the outer office of a theatrical agency in the roaring 40s.
No casting today.
Can't use you today, sister.
No casting today.
Can't use you today.
No casting today. Okay. No casting.
You mean there's nothing for me today, mister?
You heard me, sister. Nothing doing at all.
Yes, but that paper in the subway, it said that they were casting...
Just a minute, please. Hello? What? You want George Jessel? Are you kidding? You can't get him. He's out on the coast.
George Jessel?
Hello. Hello, Mama. Mama, this is your son, Georgie. You know, Georgie, like a money order. What, Mama? Yes, Mama, you know, I'm a big man now. I'm a producer. That's right. Yes, Mama. What'd you say, Mama? I know I was a child prodigy. I know that, Mama. What, Mama? Oh, you worry about child prodigies. I see they grow up dumb. Well, they wear out their brains like I did. Now, Mama, that was me on the radio tonight. You liked it, Mama? Oh, the neighbors heard me too, huh, Mama? Yeah? How'd they like it? What? They couldn't hear me so good, but they thought my nerve was wonderful. That's all, Mama. Good night, Mama.
Now, look, kid, you don't fit in. You're not the type. Look, maybe if you were English, the boss could fit you into a road company of blithe spirit.
But I can do that, mister. I can do a Cockney, and that's English. For instance, in an air raid shelter during the last air raid over London, there was a Mrs. Higgins. She was talking to her friend, and she said,
"Oh, Mrs. Hawkins, you're down now at our Fenceville. You know my boy Wilford, he was at Dunkirk, he was. Oh, blimey, it was horrible, it was. He almost got his... Oh, don't go faint on me, Mrs. Hawkins. But he was at Dunkirk, my boy Wilford. He was there for 3 whole days. Monday, Tuesday, oh, that was bad. Oh, blimey, oh, it was bad. But Wednesday, Mrs. Hawkins, it was horrible. It rained all day, and Wilford, he hates rain.
Now, look, kid, you won't do. We're not interested. You're not the type.
Yes, but listen, mister, there are other things I can do. I can sound like W.C. Fields, I can. Honestly, I can, mister.
Look here, my psychopathic little moron. I am about to relate an amazing story. And when I was born, I had a body, arms, legs, and a neck. My father took one look at me, picked me up, rushed me over to Feeney's Bar and Grill, thrust me into the arms of the bartender and said, "Put a head on that."
Look, are you kidding? Are you kidding? You're wasting your time. You're not the type.
Yes, mister, but listen, mister, I can do other things besides that. I can do great actresses. Great actresses like Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, darling, darling. It is the most horrible thing that happened to me. Darling, you don't know what I've been through. Oh, it was ghastly, really ghastly. There I was, with the waves lashing at me, the thunder and the lightning about to strike me. Oh, it was ghastly. And there I was, with nothing around me but men. Men leering at me. Men gazing at me. Men. Oh. The last time I'll ever take a ferry boat to Staten Island.
Now look, girlie. Girlie, if that's Bankhead, I'll take bank night. It pays off better. Look, you're not the type. Now, if you're a blonde, we might use you in that great new production, A Cabbage Grows in Brooklyn. Now, look, the producer wants a blonde. Blonde and dumb.
Say, now, ain't that a coincidence? You know, it was only this morning that Mama was saying, she says to me, "Millicent, I don't see no reason why you can't be a great actress. I mean, after all, you certainly got the looks, and you certainly got the temperament, and you certainly got class. I never seen nobody with more class than you. After all, Mom ought to know. She's seen me all dressed up to go to a formal function. And anyhow, Mama's a great theater goer. It was only yesterday she sat through 3 double features.
I'm sorry, kid, you're not the type. For the last time, get out.
Sure, I'll get out. You don't think you're the first guy that's thrown me out of an office today, do you? I wouldn't give you that much distinction. Well, in every office, they've got a glorified little office boy sitting there saying, "You're not the type, you're not the type. Whatever you do, you're not the type." Sure, I'll get out. But you remember this. I'll be back again. Oh, yes. I'll be back again tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And someday, mister, whether you believe it or not, I know I'm going to be the type.
What's the difference between confidence and over-optimism? The invasion of Europe is coming. Do you think it will succeed? Sure. But why do you think so? There lies the difference between confidence and over-optimism. If you think it'll be a pushover because, well, haven't we got the finest and bravest soldiers in the world? Haven't we got the most and the best planes and tanks and guns? And haven't we got Hitler backed into a corner anyway? That's over-optimism. But if you're thinking that this is going to be the toughest struggle in history, that it's going to take everything we've got at the front and at home to put it over,
that you know we can win because you and your neighbor and every other American right up to the firing line will give it all we've got come what may, that's confidence. And your thinking will show in what you do. You'll want to be part of that attack. There's a fourth war loan on, and you hear the words, "Let's all back the attack." You'll know that if those words don't mean you, they don't mean anybody. Maybe it means sacrifice, even hardship, to buy at least an extra $100 war bond during this drive. If you have confidence in victory, you won't flinch at that sacrifice any more than our soldiers will at the zero hour. You'll find the way to buy an extra war bond and be part of that attack. And when it's done, remember, you've made a good investment, too.
There are certain traditions of the entertainment world that are practically inviolable. One is that all opera stars must at intervals during their careers be photographed seasoning soup or stirring a stew in their own darling little kitchens, or be doing the same to spaghetti in somebody else's restaurant. Furthermore, all movie queens in the upper income brackets always scrub out their swimming pools on their own hands and knees and invariably play tennis in high-heeled shoes. In general, they must, in spite of their glamorous profession, display a strong streak of domesticity. And so as Kay Armand comes back to sing another song, it says here in the book that she makes her own clothes. Well, that, it strikes me, is a strictly private matter to be thrashed out among the dressmakers whose business she's ruining. Our immediate concern is with the fact that besides making her own clothes, Miss Armand is about to sing Tessa's Torch Song, an incendiary little ditty from Danny Kaye's new picture, Up in Arms.
Of me. that was the end. The end of my friend. The end of my man.
Opportunity, according to all reports, has a distressing habit of knocking but once at every door. But for us of the Hall of Fame, opportunity has for once relented. For the second time within the hour, we have an opportunity to hear Helen Hayes come to the microphone to play still another scene from her current New York success, Harriet. So listen well to the voice of Harriet Beecher Stowe in the year 1863. Or is it 1863? Does not the voice of Harriet echo perhaps in this year of decision and grace, 1944? Listen.
Harriet has written Uncle Tom's Cabin. A nation's economic sickness has flamed into the fever of the war between the states. Sumter, Antietam, Shiloh. All have had their thunderous day, and still the bonny blue flag of the South remains uncrushed by the Northern giant. Harriet's son Freddie has been wounded at Gettysburg, and Harriet herself, great woman, has been invited to the White House by the president. Now she is home again. A crowd waits outside her window. What did he say to you, Harriet? What did the president say?
What did he say? Well, first he led me over by the window, and then he said...
So you're the little woman who made this great war.
2 weeks ago, when I went from among you to the bedside of my son, that would have been an unbearable accusation. For I took with me a heart full of bitterness and doubt. 1 hour with our president has lifted my spirits and endowed me with new strength. He has made me see that this war, which seems so final to us now, is but one small pattern in a vast tapestry of struggle.
We cannot escape history.
Since the dawn of history, there have always been tyrants, great and small, who have seized upon and enslaved their fellow men.
The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the last generation. In giving freedom to the slave, we assure freedom for the free. We bear that responsibility. We shall nobly save, or meanly lose, the last best hope of earth.
But always, always there have been noble souls who have bravely and gladly given their lives for the eternal right of man to liberty.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The hope of today lies in this, that we, as a people, are no longer willing to accept tyrants and the world they make without question. For as Ben Franklin said,
those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
We are learning that a world that holds happiness for some but misery for others cannot endure. Yes, that is our hope. Our danger is this, that when the conflict is finished and the war weariness is set in, we may be tempted to forget, to slip back into the old ways. Then, and only then, will our sons have died in vain. Then will the battle have to be fought again, and perhaps yet again. a day will come when this, our little life, will be ended. All will be gone, all who raged, all who threatened, the weaklings who yielded, the men who stood and bore infamy and scorn for the truth. Yes, life will be over for us, but eternity will never efface from our souls whether we did well or ill, fought bravely or failed like cowards. It is for us to decide whether at the end we may say with truth, I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith.
Our thanks, Helen Hayes, for a living image of Harriet and for a living echo of her faith. Next week on the Radio Hall of Fame, Ed Gardner, the Archie of Duffy's, Ella Mae Morse, Eddie Green, Bud Hulick, and others. Also, we're looking forward to the return of our maestro, Paul Whiteman. We'd expect you at the gates of the hall this time next week, this station. Signed, Deems Taylor.
The production and writing staff of the Radio Hall of Fame includes Dee Engelbach, Milton Geiger, and Abel Green, editor of Variety. George Jessel was heard tonight through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox Films. This is Glenn Riggs saying goodbye for Philco dealers and distributors throughout the United States and Canada, and from the Philco Corporation, makers today of electronic materials to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of materials for good living in a world at peace.
This is the Blue Network.